It's Friday, March 24th, 2017. Back out east, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week I talk to our capital muckraker-in-chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. This week in Trumplandia, to repeal or not to repeal? That was the question and technically still is on the table right now as we speak. Democrats throw down a supreme challenge. Do they have the discipline and spine to carry through? Bernie Sanders puts faith in organized resistance in the face of an inept Democratic Party. And Nancy Pelosi's still wedded to a losing script. Closing in on Trumpkovsky and his bratva, Devin Nunes slips out the back door of House Intelligence Committee to run and tell Daddy Donald that G-men are busting up the party. Rex Tillerson blows off NATO in favor of golf getaway at Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort with the Chinese president. Got to get rested up for that big trip to Moscow. And, of course, Ivanka, sweet, sweet Ivanka, gets a West Wing office as the first adult child of a president. Pennsylvania's still a great place to be if you love the crazy. Representative Scott Perry claims EPA is infringing upon God's right to pollute. Perry's spokesperson took to Facebook to clarify that Perry didn't mean God creates all pollution, just most of it in the Chesapeake Bay. PA State Public Utility Commissioner Robert Powelson says anti-pipeline protesters are engaged in a jihad against natural gas. Will that comment be enough to get him his sought-after Trump appointment? We'll see. And still freaked out by fake news and protesting grandmas, good old boy Daryl Metcalf bans media from press conference on a right to work right in the state capitol. It was a press conference, and he doesn't understand why no press showed up. Questions still remain if PA GOP used dark magic to open a sinkhole in front of Capitol in an attempt to swallow a bus of citizens prepared to rally against the repeal of the ACA. Critics, however, say it might just have been years of GOP-imposed austerity and neglect of key infrastructure. Meanwhile, Senator Casey seems to be growing into his spine. Just in time, too, as it looks like conservative rebranded moderate Representative Charlie Dent may be throwing in his hat to challenge Casey in 2018. And tomorrow in Philadelphia, we'll be hosting a Labor Notes Troublemaker School. Oh, the good folks at Labor Notes are bringing the trouble right down to Philadelphia for a day of training and organizing the resistance. And I will be on hand there. I'll be talking as part of a panel on the ABSCUF strike. And, of course, Raging Chicken will be covering the event. I want to remind everybody to tune in to the Rick Smith Show this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Yours truly will be there giving the weekly resistance report. And this is the Rick Smith Show, not just his weekly radio show, folks, but Saturday at 7 p.m. on Free Speech TV. Yep, and you can restream that show live on freespeech.org. You can also tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, and with the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And remember, folks, we need you to keep Pull No Punches progressive media going strong. Become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $2 a month. Simply go to ragingchickenpress.org and look for that support and membership tab. Click Become a Member and you're on your way. Or click Be a Patron to become a member through Patreon. Not ready to become a member? No problem. We got you covered. You can make a one-time donation by clicking Donate. And we're going to have our new T-shirt release is coming up probably later today, maybe this evening. We're going to have a No Rest to No Trump shirt that will be released, as well as a Drain Trump and His Swamp. All right. We're digging in, folks, and we need you. Support us if you can. Help us hold power accountable. So, Sean, it's been another wonderful kind of all sorts of topsy-turvy, crazy week. How are you holding up?
I'm doing great. You know, I'm actually pretty happy. I found out that there is one person in Pennsylvania that is doing more work than me, and that is God.
God. That's what I hear. I hear, you know what? And I hear
he's been really busy as of late.
Well, and I hear he's not only busy, I hear that, you know, he's feeling like, you know, people are just not appreciating his, you know, what he's doing for everybody.
Well, I mean, on the fifth day, you know, he did create pollution.
That's what I heard. Says it in the
it's
good
right
book.
It's right there in Genesis.
Says it in the good book. So Scott Perry is getting all, man, he's got his panties in a bunch this week for what he's saying, that the media misrepresented the words that came out of his mouth and is on tape.
Yeah.
So tell me a little about what he's doing.
So this is actually a great story.
Yeah, it is.
So last week, Scott Perry had a town hall, and a bunch of media outlets were there. And one of the things was that he said that it really didn't get reported on until like Monday. What ended up happening was this event happened Saturday. Sunday night, a video started surfacing on the internet. And he was asked a question at the town hall. It went, "How will you reclaim and protect our air and water reserves with the proposed cuts to the EPA? Do you support the cuts to the EPA? Pennsylvania has a history of environmental problems. Air and water are shared across state lines. Do we need a stronger EPA to protect the environment?" So this is that was a question that was asked by a constituent, because you know his district runs with the right along the Susquehanna River, which is right next to my apartment, in the heavily gerrymandered Harrisburg area. You know, our place is gerrymandered between Lou Barletta and Scott Perry.
Oh man, that's one hell of a sandwich.
Exactly. I actually do a Google Maps to figure out like how far it is, how long Lou Barletta's district is from the northernmost tip down to the southernmost tip, and it's 3 hours across from like the tip of almost like up to New York State, all the way down through Shippensburg.
Jesus.
But so to get back on point here, you know, he's talking about like the EPA forced the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection to clean up the Chesapeake Bay, right? They came up with this solution back in 2010, and it was to implement best management practices, stream to prevent runoff from farms into the river, into the Susquehanna River, which is the largest contributor source point of pollution for the Chesapeake Bay, because that's where the river goes. It's the only river it really dumps into the Chesapeake Bay. Who would have thought? So
I think they call that area something like a watershed or something.
Yeah. The Chesapeake Bay watershed. You see those signs along the turnpike when you're going out there. So yeah. And you know, everyone knows besides Scott Perry that farm pollution and farm runoff is the largest burden of pollution into the Chesapeake watershed. And since most of the river goes through Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania is the biggest polluter of the bay. It's not that hard to figure out. So Scott Perry goes in to say, leave some violators out. And here's his quote. "And by the way, some violators, if you are spiritual and you believe in God, one of the violators was God. Because the forests were providing a certain amount of nitrates and phosphates to the Chesapeake Bay." So this video goes viral, right? No, this video doesn't go viral.
Gee, I wonder why the video goes out. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
So this the video originally goes out. That goes out is from people who were live streaming the event, right? Both Penn Live and York YDR were there, and they didn't report on this originally. And so we get the ball
somebody
rolling.
Somebody did, though. somebody by the name of Sean Kitchen seemed to kind of take hold of that one pretty good.
So I watched this. I was like, holy crap, this didn't go viral yet? And like people are like, there's videotape of like the event coming out from a couple of the news outlets. And we got the ball rolling. And yeah, this caused a lot of negative press for Representative Congressman Perry.
Yeah, well, and I say, and you know, let's get credit where credit is due, Sean. I mean, not only just get the ball rolling. I mean, you know, again, because we've
got this part of national, international.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like you've got. I mean, it's not like that. You just kind of just posted the article, but even this goes right to, you know, right to a kind of a model that we've been kind of building for years now. Is the idea is that, you know, we've got relationships built with some people in the kind of national news. So when stuff we get stuff sent to them, or they pay attention to what's going on our site, they'll pick it up. So your story that you published and kind of got there got picked up by the Huffington Post, right? And it got picked up there, and the Huffington Post ran with it, right? Got linked back to Raging Chicken, and then you know, people started one after the other following up on this stuff until it went absolutely nuts. So, and now, you know, what kills me is that even if you look at that statement, which you start out with, you know, look at his Facebook page, right, where his spokesperson basically saying, no, they're taking it out of context and they're not saying it. It's like even that statement just basically reiterates just what you said, right, except it tries to damp it down a little bit. Now, one of the things I'll put a little kind of pushback on is that I don't think that Scott Perry doesn't know that those farms are the biggest polluters. I think it's just outright direct deception, an attempt to play the kind of God card, right, as a way to kind of against the EPA.
I think that this is one of those statements that was probably rehearsed.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying.
This was a rehearsed statement coming from Scott Perry. Do I think he's a Bible thumper? Absolutely.
Yep.
But no, I think that this is a rehearsed statement coming from Scott Perry and from the sources that be, the higher ups and within like the messaging gurus within the Republican Party or the messaging gurus from the Koch brothers, pretty much telling them, no, you cannot blame phosphates. You cannot blame nitrogen. You cannot blame fertilizers for this because that will hurt our industry. Just blame someone, blame God.
Exactly. And if you watch that video, and this is where I think goes to support exactly the point you just made, when he makes that point in that video and you watch when he introduces that, right, it's almost like he's like the little light bulb goes off. Okay, this would be a good place to insert that script. And then he goes forward with it.
And he goes straight through with it without even stopping, without even budging. Like he had that rehearsed going into it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. And I think that's important because, you know, here you go trying to use the kind of God card basically to kind of distract people away from, you know, from like the real culprit here. Right. And again, instead of trying to solve the problem, like the very people that he's trying to kind of like, you know, fan the flames behind and get them behind to get the anti-EPA stuff, are the people that are, you know, potentially going to be harmed the most, by the kind of rollback of any EPA regulations in the Chesapeake.
Right. And, you know, I feel like this is also coming from, you know, we saw it last week with Daryl Metcalf and his press conference on the undocumented immigrants, you know, just constantly saying illegal invasion. You know, these are scripted words that they have that they're probably told to use from the people higher on up within the Republican Party or within the donor base, pretty much.
No, I agree 100%. And like, you know, and Scott Perry, you know, he's basically shown himself being totally, you know, willing to do this kind of stuff. And, you know, and here you go. And, you know, again, this is a guy who's operating on the national level. But this is kind of what he's bringing back to PA in our own backyard. So it's something else. And, you know, again, on that messaging thing, I mean, you know, again, like on the kind of the, you know, the runoff today is like, I mean, look at runoff. What am I thinking? The rundown today. You know, one thing I mentioned there too, as well, is you got this Public Utility Commissioner, Robert Powelson, right? In my mind, this is also one of these things that's rehearsed, right? You know, ways of kind of trying to kind of stoke these flames. It basically goes up to anti-pipeline protesters. You know, he's not saying it to them. He's at this meeting, this kind of upstream PA conference on Tuesday. And he basically said that, quote, and this is reported by NPR, right? He says, blah, 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 that the people, quote, people opposing pipeline projects are engaged in a jihad to keep natural gas from reaching new markets, right? Now, of course, since then, as you would expect, right, he's kind of tried to roll that back and said, oh, the comment was inappropriate. You know, I shouldn't have done that. I was just trying to talk about their disruptive
behavior. Taking down context.
Well, he was basically saying, I was just trying to characterize their disruptive or threatening behavior by interrupting public meetings and so on. Right. Meanwhile, right, you know, again, this is, you know, tactics that we saw from the Tea Party that were kind of like championed by these very same people, you know. And but, you know, here you go. This is that kind of message that's meant to have, you know, the ears.
The trigger effect.
Yeah, trigger effect, and it's supposed to have a narrow audience. And I think that what a lot of these legislators are finding right now, or commissioners in this case, are finding that is that while people showing up and people paying attention, it gets harder for them to spew this nonsense because people are paying attention and they're shining a light on it. Now, with this guy, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say one of the things. So there's a new chair of the Pennsylvania Republican Party in Pennsylvania, Val DiGregorio, and he published an op-ed calling leftist crybabies, pretty much. And he was complaining about the public involvement and the civic involvement that's been going on since the Trump election, since the rise of the resistance. You know, we'll probably talk about this later on, but, you know, there was a great thing on Maddow the other night about, you know, the day after Trump gets elected, the largest demonstrations in United States history happened, you know, with the Women's March. And that's when it kind of started. You know, it was starting before that, but it's carried on through 3 or 4 months later now.
Exactly. And if you
and these are the things that they are worried and they're scared about.
Absolutely. And, you know, here's the other thing, though, too, as well, is like, you know, this is something that, you know, you and I talked about way back, I think maybe even like right after Trump's election, maybe even before then. But we were talking about the long term effects of Trump would have on the state. Right. Especially as we see, you know, kind of more crazy, you know, people are saying, well, there's no way that Trump's going to get elected, or we're going to see that, you know, after the election, people saying, well, you know, that's a one time thing. And now people will bounce back. Now, what you see is actually some of these politicians that are actually kind of doubling down on the Trump rhetoric and trying to basically kind of still ride that wave of kind of racist, anti-immigrant, you know, fear-mongering, right? So, I mean, this guy, and why I point to that with Paulinson, right? Because Paulinson is reported back earlier this month in the beginning of March by multiple outlets that Donald Trump was seriously considering tapping Robert Paulinson, right, to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, right? So he basically, here you got a guy who basically wants to look at protesters as carrying out a jihad against natural gas delivery, right? Being a potential, like, you know, shortlist candidate for Donald Trump to bring him into the FERC, right, would basically position him perfectly to push back nationally, right, and interfere in states in order to kind of push back against protesters, push back against this kind of resistance, and facilitate the kind of rapid construction of the pipelines. So, I mean, you know, this is the kind of stuff that, you know, we gotta watch. And I think that paying attention to these people's language, these are not just missteps. These are not just things that accidentally came out of their mouths. This is part of, you know, an orchestrated campaign.
And one of the things, again, locally, so, what we're witnessing here in Pennsylvania, especially in the state house, you know, Val DiGregorio publishes this op-ed earlier this week, right? Basically going after calling them crybaby leftists, Tuesday with Toomey's, Mondays with Murphy, you know, all these different types of civic engagement movements that are popping up across Pennsylvania, where people are going to town halls, they're yelling out their thing. They're basically playing off the Tea Party playbook from 2009, 2010. Right. The indivisible groups. He's calling out these groups by name. They're using the same strategy that the Tea Party used 8 years ago. And now they're upset about this. Right.
Yep.
Now they're crying. Now they're crying about this. And one of the things we see is what happened with Daryl Metcalf earlier this week.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful Daryl Metcalf, our favorite friend, Daryl Metcalf. Please do tell.
So, all right. So,
let me give the one setup. I got to say this. So if you remember, if anybody didn't listen to the podcast last week, one thing we highlighted last week is, and if you go to our Facebook page and check out the video that Sean posted on this, is that Daryl Metcalf officially kind of blessed Sean with the fake news moniker when Sean was trying to ask him some pointed questions. But apparently, so you are part of the fear, Sean.
I am. But one of the things I've seen here over the past 2 years, and, you know, 2 years going up to this year, right? So before January 1st, 2017, the 2 years I've been out here in Harrisburg, there has been little to zero civic engagement inside the Pennsylvania state capitol, right? Mm-hmm. People come up here, they have their lobby days, they go home, right? There's no sustained movement in central Pennsylvania. There's no movement. They're calling out we're calling out these legislators on a daily basis for their bullshit. And since the election since Tuesday with Toomey has started, there has been a group of about 15 to 30 activists within central Pennsylvania who have been coming out to these press conferences, who have been coming out to these events in the Capitol, and who have made their presence known with these far right legislators and with Metcalf, Saccone, and other events going on. So these people are coming out here. These people are packing. They're packing committee hearings. You know, they're making their presence known inside committee hearings when abortion bans are coming up and other issues. These people are coming out here, and we saw what happened last week. 20 protesters showed up to protest Daryl Metcalf's illegal invasion bill, the alien invasion, you know, talking and all this jingoistic rhetoric that was coming out of it, all this racist rhetoric, xenophobic, you name it. And Metcalf, it stunned Metcalf. You could see it. He was pissed off by the end. In the video we posted online, he looked like a cornered raccoon pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, he looked like a cornered rat, and he didn't know how to respond to it. So what does he do this week? He holds a press conference on right to work legislation at 9 a.m., right?
That's right. Yeah, right at the beginning of the news cycle. That's right. Here you go.
Right before anyone's in the Capitol building, he holds his press conference, right?
Yeah.
He then, so Roxbury brings his camera and he's going into the news conference. And he didn't, I don't know if he didn't record it, but he told me what happened. There were four officers outside, four officers outside of the media room. And it was, the event was for credentialed press only. So they would not let Roxbury in, even though he had his credentialed press passes, right? Mm-hmm. And so now this press conference is on right to work legislation packet that he introduced. So he did that to stop, to pretty much stop the union lobbyists and other people from going in there, right? That's so right. Roxbury then doubles back, goes up to the GOP spokesperson, is like, hey, what the hell's going on here? I tried to get into a press conference and people outside the door wouldn't let me in. So he ends up going in there and no one showed up for this press conference. But you now see what the reaction is from Metcalf here.
No, exactly. And, you know, here you go.
These people are scared within their own building. You know, this is their safe space. You know, they get away with doing this shit out here in the Capitol, and they've never been called out on it before. Now they have been called out, the conservatives in this building, for the past 3 months now since the election.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like exactly what you said. I mean, the point that I think stood out for me the most, why this guy was crazy, is that you have got these armed guards. You got security guards that are sitting there preventing even some, you know, people with credentials from getting in. And really the message there is like what Metcalf and his people are doing are screening the people that he wants in. So he's only going to let in the media that he thinks can be friendly to him. Meanwhile, I would assume that PCN was probably in there. It's his, you know, Pennsylvania kind of, you know, it's like a public station, open access stuff. They were probably filming it, right? So
I don't know. PCN probably wasn't filming it.
Not even Capital PCN, just his people.
No, Capital Media Service was probably filming
Capital
it.
Media Services,
which is different from PCN. So they don't broadcast. They just they record the video for the caucuses and then give them the video. Pretty much. Yeah.
So here you go. So this is kind of like, you know, it's a weird scenario where you've got someone who's kind of giving a press conference on his right to work legislation, which is kind of, you know, majorly controversial, right? Right out of the kind of Koch brothers and right wing Mercer playbook. But then he locks out basically the media, doesn't want really anybody there to cover it. And you're right. I mean, it's like his little safe space is taken away. Poor little snowflake. So he has, and this is going to happen, you know, and it reminds me of exactly the kind of thing we saw with Scott Wagner when he introduced his, you know, he's basically announcing his run for governor, is basically wants to have a tight control on any kind of media coverage in there, which again, just underscores all the more reason why, you know, the protests and the resistance are being effective, right? And the kind of, you know, I don't know, I guess like rebirth of a more vigorous media is also showing its toll. And this is a good thing.
Right. And I'm not going to say I don't have an adversarial relationship with the whole entire GOP in the House. I mean, within the Capitol building, I do have a working relationship. You know, I do know the spokespeople for the GOP inside the caucuses. I know we talk and they treat me with respect and dignity, right? I mean, like as a caucus, you know, and it's like, cause it's not like they're not screening the media. They see me at all the things. They know I ask questions, but I won't try to corner people into like a gotcha question. We ask legitimate questions within the Capitol, but there's certainly a rift happening with more conservative members inside the Capitol who they're screening. They're going off the rails a little bit.
No, right. And I think that's happening. You know, again, this is what happens when, you know, they don't have the cover of, you know, a media that's half asleep and a citizenry that is kind of not engaged. I mean, once people start getting engaged and putting up and getting the pressure on and they know that they're being watched, then suddenly their nice little talking points don't sound so nice, even to their own ears, because they can anticipate what the reaction is going to be. But it's crazy. But, you know, at least at the very least, we can say, you know, there's also, you know, rumors that have been going around. I know this is unsubstantiated and stuff like this, but I have heard that as a way to try to prevent some of those activists from getting to the Capitol to put this kind of pressure on, that there was a backroom secret dark magic ceremony held to open up a sinkhole to try to swallow up a bus of protesters. So, can you confirm any of that, Sean?
Well, I have two things to think about this. So either shit flows downhill and shit gets backed up, or Satan was trying to reclaim his throne on Tuesday. Because what happened was, I'm standing on the Capitol. I watched this happen. You know, I didn't see the bus go under, but I saw like the back fender of the bus touching the concrete, like touching the asphalt. And either I thought like one of two things. Okay, the hydraulic broke on the bus, right? Or it like got a flat tire. So, you know, this is at 10:30 in the morning. I go to Tuesday with Toomey. Me and Roxbury are talking, and we're walking back to the Capitol, and Roxbury's like, "What the hell is going on here?" I was like, "Oh, there was a bus broke down like right outside of your office building." Right now, I think it was Roxbury doing this. I think Roxbury was trying to dig into a couple of the probably the Manufacturer Association building right across the street, but he couldn't get there. But this happens right out from Roxbury's office, and here we get there, and there's a you know, everything's taped off, and a 10 by 15 foot deep sinkhole opened up due to a collapsed sewer line that was made of bricks.
There you go. And this is something, I mean, like we should say too, is Harrisburg is, has, you know, has been known now as becoming kind of like the sinkhole capital of the country. They've been opening up all over the place, and it has everything to do with a kind of a neglected infrastructure.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, so when I think this is, I don't know if this was more of a city problem. So back in 2006, the city got like millions of dollars to repair State Street for the 100th year anniversary of the Capitol. And this was when the previous mayor was in charge. And instead of using the federal grant money to replace the whole entire street, like to dig up the street and the sewer lines, he just had the street repaved and pocketed and spread the money out to his friends within his city government.
Good old-fashioned political corruption then.
Yes. But one of the things is this brick sewer line that collapsed goes from underneath the stairs of the Capitol, right, the front steps of the Capitol, all the way down to the river, and they only replaced a 60-foot chunk of the collapsed sewer line, which means eventually the rest of the street's going to collapse at some point.
Oh my God!
What a better place to happen have this happen on State Street, where the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is at, Greenlee, and all these other conservative. Leaning lobbying groups are at.
Yeah. So let's be clear here is that, you know, as much we can look and we should, right, say that, you know, there was Harrisburg did get some money in order to fix this stuff before. Right. And it should have, but there was political corruption and all that kind of stuff. That's a contributing factor.
But the city is ravaged with potholes, sinkholes, and with like water main lines that are still made out of wooden pipes.
Exactly. And this is kind of something that is not specific only to Harrisburg, right? I mean, this is kind of like, just goes right to your point. Like, why is it important that it happens there when you have all these lobbying groups there? Because these are precisely the people that have been arguing, right, for the austerity measures, for the kind of like, you know, low taxes, low taxes, low taxes we should not be spending, and have contributed to a neglect of our infrastructure. I mean,
and one of the funny things
is, like, you know, not only do we have this problem with the sinkholes that are going on in Harrisburg, right, we also know that we have some of the worst records on our roads. We have some of the highest percentage of crumbling bridges in the country. And I don't know if I ever told you this. This happened kind of like a couple months ago now, but I'm waiting for it to happen again. I was driving to work on 78, right? And there's this stretch of 78 that runs from just west of Allentown, right around Truxtertown, out to Kutztown or the Fogelsville exit or the something around in there. And there's this long uphill stretch, right? If any time that you hear about a major winter backup, right, in outside of Allentown on 78, chances are it's right in this area because it ices up and trucks go slow and they stop. But the thing is that this continually happens is they repave the roads every couple of years, but they do it on the cheap. And then the right lane, like a lot of truck traffic on the right lane, always gets like these bumps. So you kind of, you'll be driving along and then it'll be like, boom, boom. It gets worse and worse and worse and worse, right? To the point where the trucks have to go to drive slowly in the left-hand lane because they can't control their rigs. And a couple months ago, I was heading out to Kutztown University, kind of where I teach is kind of on my way to work. And then I see this happen on the right hand side. There's one of these FedEx trucks that's got it's the short double decker, right? So it's not a big, really long, but the short double decker, right? It hit one of those bumps, apparently one too many, right? And too much. And it kind of detached the back end of the trailer. It popped off and the whole truck goes careening off of the side and into the embankment and just misses the bridge, right? I mean, this is kind of like the real consequence of actually not dealing with your infrastructure. And so that maybe that's having that sinkhole staring them like right in the face will at very least be a reminder of what they should be doing.
Well, like one of the funny things about that, every like politician you could think of was out there looking at this on their break. Okay. You had Democrats from Philly out there. You had the Senate pro tem poor top staffer out there. You know, you had all these staffers from like the Senate Republicans and Senate Democrats just out there looking at this thing, like taking pictures. It was like a congregation outside the Capitol pretty much. And everyone's just like looking at this sinkhole, like, wow, this thing just opened up right in front of us.
Ah, good. So they took it as a an opportunity for a break and a picnic than actually a call to arms. Great. Well, hey, listen, we're coming up close to a break, but before we get there, I just want to kind of touch on this too as well, is that it seems that, this week, kind of in a surprising way, I guess, I mean, for me at least, I've been always kind of hard on Casey, but Senator Casey basically has come out basically saying he's all behind the filibuster in the Supreme Court. Casey with Bob Casey.
He joined Team Spine.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I heard some analysis of this yesterday. They were saying that, you know, Casey is that kind of politician, is that, you know, he tends to be quiet. And like you've always called him like, the groundhog guy, right? Pops up every once in a while. Hey, how you doing? I'm Bob Casey. Then boom, pop back, and he just keeps quiet. But he's actually, for whatever reason, and maybe it is because he's got a contested election coming up in 2018 that he's actually throwing in with Team Spine, as you said. And that may be just in time, as we see that, you know, Charlie Dent, who is Republican of the Allentown area, he's been getting kind of increasing amounts of kind of national attention, right? Because he is now seen as a moderate, which is funny because when I moved to Pennsylvania back in 2002, Charlie Dent was known as on the right of the conservative end of things. But now he's seen as this reasonable, rational moderate, and he may just be throwing in for the senatorial race, if that's what you're telling me.
Correct. So what I've always said about Charlie Dent is Charlie Dent is what a conservative used to be. Mm-hmm. You know, he's still a conservative.
That's a good point.
But he's a conservative, but he's not an ideologue. And since he's not an ideologue, he's now a moderate. And that's how far our discourse has shifted us to the right.
Great point.
You know, our political discourse. But like, and so Monday morning, around 11, around 12 o'clock Monday afternoon, Charlie Dent's going to be speaking at the PA Press Club lunch, mm-hmm. right? It's a something that happens in Harrisburg once a month, usually the fourth Monday of every month. The Press Club lunch is a luncheon that's hosted by the Pennsylvania Correspondents Association, Legislative Correspondents Association, and or the group that's similar to that, right? And what this does is it's usually a panel. It's usually moderated by one of the journalists or someone like John Baer or someone like that will moderate this lunch, and you usually have a politician speaking there, or it's usually it's a Harrisburg insider. Sometimes it's governor. When I was out in Harrisburg, it was Governor Corbett, Jake Corman, Scarnati, Wagner. You know, these are the type of people who would speak there. But sometimes you get someone like Katie McGinty speaking, who was seeking higher office, right? So she spoke there about a month before she, or a month or two before she announced her candidacy for U.S. Senate. And usually this luncheon, you get all the Harrisburg political elites there. So people from all the lobbying firms, people from the Manufacturer Association, all the union lobbyists and leaders will all come in and gather at this lunch to hear what they have to say. They kind of throw out like a trial balloon, pretty much.
Right,
you're
right.
Speaking to the elite. And Charlie Dent's going to be speaking there Monday morning. And it's going to be interesting to see what comes out of it. Because usually in my opinion, this is him throwing his hat in the ring. There's rumors that Lou Barletta was supposed to be there, right? If you think about it, Lou Barletta and Rick Saccone will most likely fight for the crazy vote, while Charlie Dent will appear to be the moderate voice in the room and try to win over the moderate establishment Republicans within the state and carry that to a primary victory within the U.S. Senate. And yeah, this is my speculation.
No, I got it right, and I think that I think it's good to point that out as a speculation at this point. But at the same time, noticing certain things that are falling in a row, and what this makes me think. I mean, how much of behind the scenes discussions might have been going on, right, especially in the Casey camp, maybe got wind that maybe Dent was looking forward to a senatorial run. Because look, frankly, I think if Charlie Dent gets into the race, it's gonna be tight. Because in part because of kind of how we led this off with is like, look, I mean, Charlie Dent may be conservative, right? But if you are, even if you're watching like MSNBC, if you're watching any sort of the liberal media and things like this, Charlie Dent gets a lot of play, right? And he's got a national face, and he is, look, I mean, the guy, he's not an ideologue.
He's respectable. He's someone you can sit down to. He will listen to everyone within his constituency. And he might vote, you look at his Trump score on 538, he's voted with Trump 90% of the times.
Exactly.
But two of the main votes that's been against Trump has been the healthcare stuff. So he will sit down and listen to you, which is something that like Scott Perry or Lloyd Smucker will not do, right? He's very respected within his constituency, but he's still very conservative.
No, right. And I think that this is what, frankly, and this is what it comes down to. This is the same stuff, and we'll get into this after the break, but this is the same kind of stuff that's playing itself out around the kind of Supreme Court questions and things happening on a national level, is that, and this has been one of my problems with, a lot of folks' problems with, this attention solely on Trump, as if Trump is what has gotten us off the rails. So instead of looking at this kind of like just getting rid of Trump and having that kind of, our problem is Trump, really, we have to be talking about organizing for power, not just to get rid of Trump. Because here's why. Because even if Charlie, as you said, I think all that is true, there's Charlie Dent, if he gets elected, right, that's one less senator, right, as a bulwark against kind of right-wing policies in the Senate, right? So he might be a reasonable guy. And I think a lot of people say, hey, we need somebody that's reasonable in there too as well. Hey, let's get Charlie Dent a shot. Bob Casey's been in there for a while. Let's give him a shot. And he would seem to be, quote unquote, a reasonable choice. However, that shifts the balance of power ever more kind of rightward. And that's really kind of what's at stake in here. And as long as we keep attention around, like, it's the problem is Donald Trump, as opposed to the problem is the Republican Party, even if there are a few people on the margins like Charlie Dent that are still halfway reasonable, right? That's not what the agenda of the party is. So we got to kind of keep that in mind as this moves forward. But we're going to keep an eye on this and see what happens this week, because if he throws in, man, it's not just it's not just the God Squad going up against Bob Casey, but then you also got someone like Charlie.
This is the Koch brother. This is the Koch brother. This is the DeVos. This is your money backed Republican that will be thrown into the race.
Exactly. And, I'll just go out on a limb and say, if Charlie Dent gets in this race, I mean, then Casey becomes beatable. And that's going to be a dangerous thing. It's make Pennsylvania all that much more in play in 2018. All right. When we come back after the break, we're going to get into the craziness in Trumplandia, kind of looking, blow through some of the news that's out there. Again, there's going to be way too much that we could possibly ever cover, given how much has happened in a very short period of time. But we'll get through as much as we can, and maybe even some fun stuff too as well. We'll see. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back right after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1974. It was the final day of a groundbreaking gathering of more than 3,000 women union members in Chicago to found the Coalition of Labor Union Women, or CLU. The union women had come together for the purpose of increasing their voice in the labor movement. Women from 58 unions and 41 states joined the conference. Nearly 2,000 of the attendees were rank-and-file members. For many of them, the Chicago gathering was their first major labor conference. They heard a keynote address by Addie Wyatt. Addie Wyatt was the first African-American woman to hold a top office in an American labor union. She was elected vice president of her meatpacking local in 1953. Addie's speech inspired the women. They chose her to serve as the first CLU vice president. They selected Olga Mader as president of CLU. Olga had entered the United Auto Workers Union at the Ford Willow Run bomber plant during World War II.
II. She became the first woman to serve on the UAW executive board. With these two seasoned labor activists at the helm, CLU became an important force in U.S. labor. The women attending the founding convention agreed on four key goals. First was to promote affirmative action in the workplace. Second was to strengthen the role of women in unions. Third, to organize the unorganized women. And their final objective was to increase the involvement of women in the political and legislative process. Since its founding, CLU has supported efforts for pay equality, parental leave, and child care. Today, CLU continues to encourage and mentor future women labor leaders and works to involve more women in the political process.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out to Coop podcast. So, right before we get into some of the national stuff, just want to remind everybody. So, I've got the great opportunity. I'll be down in Philadelphia tomorrow. That's March 25th as part of the Labor Notes Philadelphia Troublemaker School. If you're still interested, from what I understand, is that you can still register for that conference. It's basically it's a whole day. It's basically all skill building workshops, right, that will help union members and labor activists build power on the job. I'll be there. I'll be as part of a panel in the afternoon talking a little about the ABSCUF strike. So in addition, obviously, here at Raging Chicken, I was also a mobilization chair for our union's first ever strike. So I'll be there talking there. It's an awesome event. If you've never checked out Labor Notes, right, even if you can't make it to the conference, you really should check out their publication. It has long been, I remember back when I was in college, it has long been the voice of the rank and file labor movement, not the stuff that's coming out from the folks in official spokespeople in the labor movement, but the people that kind of lean more to the democratic militant end of things. And they're just great people. And so that event will be happening down in Philadelphia from 9 o'clock to 4 p.m. And that'll be at the South America Room, the second floor of the International House, and 3701 Chestnut Street in Philadelphia. So if you're down in that area, or you're already signed up, look forward to talking with you, and we'll bring you some of that Raging Chicken Press. Check us out on the blog and Facebook and so on. So Sean, we're looking right now, we're still waiting on the break. We're just kind of checking out Twitter and the CNN live feed and things like this. It looks like the debate on the ACA is still going on about whether or not it's going to be repealed. All indications are, at least as of, like, you know, last time I was looking before we went on air today, was that that it looks like the GOP does not have the votes to push through the repeal on this.
Right. And so this actually just came across the Twitters 10 minutes ago. GOP Appropriations Chair Rodney Frelinghuysen out of New Jersey issued a statement saying the legislation before the House today is currently unacceptable. This is what the tweet said. He says, unfortunately, legislation before the House today is currently unacceptable as it would place significant new cost and barriers to care on my constituents in New Jersey. In addition to the loss of Medicaid coverage for so many people in my Medicaid dependent state, the denial of essential health benefits in the individual market raise serious coverage and cost issues. I remain hopeful that the American Healthcare Act will be further modified. We need to get this right for all Americans. So it looks like he is out and saying that this bill is still unacceptable. And this came out as of like 10 minutes ago.
Yeah. And I think that I'm not sure if this is the same guy, but he had another kind of New Jersey guy. He's Republican, right?
Yes.
Hey, you know, say, check this out. Speaking of the guy himself, right now they've got Charlie Dent right there on CNN, who was just being interviewed about the ACA. So, you know, more to our point that we were making before the break. But anyways, the point is that there was a guy from New Jersey last night. I'm just spacing his name. I'm not sure if it's the same guy, who was also saying virtually the same thing last night. What's interesting about the way that this debate is going down is that you have, on the one side, you've got the Freedom Caucus, right? You know, the super right folks who are looking at the American Healthcare Act, as Ryan is calling it. America is not basically like right-wing enough, right? That it covers too many people, that it covers too many afflictions, it keeps too many things intact, right? So that you have that on the one side. And then you've got the folks like the Republicans that come out of New Jersey, several of them, they're in New Jersey and other places that are on the more moderate end of things that are basically saying that they're going to pay a direct price with the repeal of the ACA because people are actually going to lose coverage. So you basically right now have a Republican caucus that's at war or a party really that's at war with itself over its own bill.
And one of the things, you know, this fight's been going on for 7 years now. They really have had the time to, you know, come up with a plan and they haven't. And really like the other day in the state capitol, I came across a really interesting situation. The House Democrats, you know, the state House Democrats here, House leadership held a press conference, which was fucking horrible. It totally bombed.
Wait a minute. You mean like, wait, there's a Democratic Party press conference, right, in Pennsylvania, and it bombed? That's very surprising to me, Sean.
So many things went wrong. First of all, the party, right? If you look at the Republican Party, whenever they have anything, they have these young rising stars, right? Most of these people came for the Democratic press conference really came from the crypt, right? Just shows you the face of this demo, who the face of the Democratic Party is.
Right.
And really an interesting point was brought up by, an interesting point was brought by Steve Essick, right? From the morning call, but the messaging around this was inconsistent over the past 7 years, right? There was no messaging defending Obamacare from the Democrats over the past 7 years, right? We could all say this.
Well, and I would say that too, at the national level and at the state level, especially, I think that the PA Democrats, and we've talked about this multiple times on this program, is that have been nowhere to be found where it actually talks about building organization and building momentum and building a strong message around policies. Absolutely.
So they allowed this one person to speak, Representative DeLuca, which I don't even know where he's from. He's on like some sort of like co-chair. He gets up there and he starts speaking for about 20 minutes at a press conference. And I'm just sitting there with my head over my head like, oh, my God, you got to be kidding me. They allowed this one guy to speak 20 minutes on a resolution asking the Pennsylvania congressional delegation to all vote against this bill, right? And you know the resolution wasn't going to get passed, but the messaging standpoint, you don't have someone up there speaking 20 minutes on a resolution. He went completely off script and start rambling and lost the attention of everyone in the room. And so after he was done speaking, Representative Frankel, who is good at what he does, you know, he knows what he's doing when it comes to messaging. The whole entire time they called it the Trump Ryan Care bill, right? Instead of like Trump Ryan Care or Ryan Care or Trump Care, they're like Trump Ryan Care. Like they couldn't get it out in all in one shot. There was some sort of like, I got like caught up in the throat somehow. And this is like the way they were calling it. Essick asked.
You know what? On that point, you know what I think? I think they should do it. I don't know why somebody hasn't picked up on this yet. They should be calling it Trying Care. We're trying. Trying Care.
So
they can't even do that. Essick, come on.
Essick pretty much asked the question for the past 7 years. You had no messaging around the resistance to the Obamacare, you know, towards the ACA and the amount of times Republicans were going after it. There was just no messaging at all coming from the party. Isn't this what you deserve? Don't you deserve this? And like,
how'd that go over?
Oh, that went over like a lead brick. That sunk real fast. The way like the podium is set up, right? So Frankel's at the podium. Now, you got to set up like a diagonal line, right? Frankel's at the podium, and one side of that line is Essick, and the other side of that line is House Speaker Frankie Shrugs Dermody. And
Frankie Shrugs, noted, everybody. Hashtag Frankie Shrugs.
So he, like, you see, like, Dermody literally, like, bend his back over and to the right, like that Seinfeld skit, back
yeah,
and to
back
the left.
And to the right.
To, like, see who asked that question. Mm-hmm. And you want to talk about, like, oh, shit. That caught some attention. That pissed off everyone. And no, he has a valid point there.
Exactly.
Like, you did nothing for the past 7 years. Isn't this what you deserve? Aren't you getting what you deserve?
Well, and I think that, you know,
because like there's been no messaging to counterpoint this.
Well, there's been let's be clear that it's not just messaging. It's also, there's been no organizing, right? So it's not just that the words weren't coming up. There's been no organizing.
So DeLuca, DeLuca goes back up onto the press conference, right?
DeLuca, by the way, I just looked him up. He's in the he's the 32nd legislative district out of Allegheny County.
So he goes back up there and says, well, really, once you allow someone to define something like Obamacare, you lose the battle.
That's just crazy.
That was his logic.
So basically, you say nothing about it. You pretend it doesn't exist and everything's fine.
And you let them vote 50 times to defund, to repeal Obamacare over the past 6 years. Yes, because that's...
And we wonder why the Democratic Party is just getting its like front handed to it right now.
Yeah, and I guess this is a great conversation we were having last night because about what Bernie Sanders said on Maddow.
Yeah, so here, yeah, so this is what we had to go. So Bernie Sanders last night, I thought it was great. Like, so I'm sitting there, you know, I had to kind of come to work early and have to do this show today from work. So I had to kind of prep for the show today last night. And so I was watching kind of Maddow's show last night, and Bernie Sanders was on talking about the ACA and stuff. And Bernie Sanders, man, I tell you, the guy freaking brought it. And Maddow basically set him up, you know, basically to talk about bringing people out in the streets, to kind of the fact that it was Bernie's organization, Our Revolution, that was organized before Trump actually became inaugurated back on the 15th of January, right? Had organized kind of like around this thing they called Our First Stand, which basically was a defense of the ACA back then. And that's what first started bringing people back out into the streets about the ACA. So that's kind of important. So that was kind of the context it comes on. And he starts talking about how absolutely important it is that people are out in the streets and how much this movement has influenced it. And he says everything that we've just said here about, you know, about Republican parties want to strip the stuff away, about throwing people off health insurance, about stripping away patients' Bill of Rights, all the thing that's bad about it. And then Maddow basically says is basically, well, how do you think that someone like Mitch McConnell, right, out in Kentucky could possibly throw his support behind the repeal of the ACA when we know in Kentucky and like places like Kentucky and West Virginia have been some of the biggest recipients or beneficiaries, I should say, of the ACA, of Obamacare, because it's allowed them to get health insurance through their state exchanges, which is, of course, subsidized as part by the federal government through Obamacare. So, and Sanders basically says, he stops, kind of like stops the conversation. And he comes in, and he says, I want you to think about this. And he basically says, Mitch McConnell can do this, right? And he may go ahead and do this, and he'll get away with it. Why? Right? Because there is no organized opposition. The Democratic Party is inept when it comes to this. And then he says, and the follows up, that's why it is important that everyone remain in the streets and flooding your congressional offices and so on. It was this really interesting moment because is up until that point, he kept on saying, we need to do this. We need to stay in the streets. And you could think, right, you know, given the way our media is structured, that he was talking about we as a Democratic Party. No, he was talking about we as the organized resistance. And he closes out that like little segment saying that, you know, that's why we need a political revolution. I mean, it was like, boom, right back to the Sanders campaign. And it stood in such stark contrast because right before then, right before Sanders comes on, Maddow had Nancy Pelosi's statement, right? And Nancy Pelosi gets up there, right, to talk about, you know, the ACA was supposed to go to a vote last night, right? But that didn't happen. So Nancy Pelosi gets up there and is all smug, right? And saying, well, I guess we have a message for Donald Trump that, you know, when you try to do something like this before you got the votes, I mean, I know how to count, right? And you try to push something through by saying you can do that. Oops, rookie mistake, Donald, right? That's her message, right? Rookie mistake. Again, from the playbook that it's Donald Trump, right? What we saw going come out of Bernie Sanders' mouth was the fact that was to say, no, this is the Republican Party's plan. This is not just Donald Trump. This is Republican Party's. This is Paul Ryan and right across the board. This is the other thing I find very interesting. Some of the kind of right-wing organizations that are out there right now too as well, who are anti this, right? Ones are more associated with the Freedom Caucus. Those people do not call this Trump care. Right, like the Democrats are trying to brand it Trump care. They call it Ryan care. They call it Ryan care because they're trying to put pressure upon Paul Ryan because they recognize it's his plan that's not conservative enough. Right. So, you know, look, all Trump is there to do right now is basically sign his name on the bottom line. Right. All he wants is the deal. Right. And yet you still have Democratic leadership sitting there saying, right, that this is just all about Trump. And that's pretty crazy. So that was just kind of interesting. You see this again, you see this, you know, playing itself on the national level. But I mean, that kind of internal party conflict of the Democratic Party, right, has yet to kind of make its way into such a public space here in Pennsylvania. That's for sure, as we see demonstrated by that, that very press conference you're talking about.
Yeah, and like one of the things I can't go on the record with the person's name, but one of the top, like, a staffer within the Democratic Party was just like, after that press conference, like, wow, that was brutal.
Well, it is. And, you know, if you know, I think I'm going to try to find, when I post the show notes to this, I'm going to try to find a link to that, if they have the video of that posted anywhere, is like that. So people just can basically absorb the suck, right? And see exactly what we're talking about, and like have to feel the discomfort of knowing that this is the party leadership in this state.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Because one of the things that, one of the things Sanders was talking about last night is that we have to be in, we people, you know, or the party has to be organized in West Virginia, you know, in Kentucky, in Alabama, in central Pennsylvania, in rural Pennsylvania for that matter.
Yes.
I mean, you see what happens. Like we've been saying this for the past few months now here in Pennsylvania, there is a resistance growing in the center part of the state. There's a big time resistance. A couple of the townships here on the west shore of Harrisburg voted for a Democrat for the first time ever, pretty much. You know, Democrats are mobilized out here. You have people in Lancaster with Keystone Progress and Lancaster Stands Up is doing down there. You know, Jonathan Smucker, basically, he was cited in The Nation this week in a really good interview, mm-hmm. saying, you know what? If the Democrats aren't going to come out and organize, we're going to organize this, and we're going to primary you Democrats who don't want to do this.
That's right. I mean, that's basically what's got to happen. It's got, you know, right now we have the opportunity. You know, I look at this as kind of like, it's like the moment of star stuff. You know what I mean? Like where the kind of like the emergent of the kind of, you know, the new star is going to be potentially emerge. And I don't mean stars in the kind of like, you know, celebrities, because I've had enough of the celebrity garbage in politics right now. But what I mean is kind of like, you know, bubbling up from kind of people organizing in there. Your activists and your people that will be the next kind of round of representatives that have to be prepared not only like, you know, to take local offices and so on, but having the long-term game of basically gutting the leadership of the Democratic Party and taking it over. I mean, I think that's, you know, in this state, and I think that's all that's possible. And, you know, right now, here's a perfect example, right? And I was looking around this morning to see if anybody in PA jumped on this, right? If the Democrats jumped on, no. So last night, so for example, we know that the Keystone XL pipeline, right, is just basically been giving its final approval. It's looked ready to get its final permitting as soon as next Monday, I believe, right, is when the 60 days that Trump set off are going to be done. So here's the deal. The State Department just releases information on this, right? Now, remember the two things that we saw on the campaign, both from the Republicans, we've heard from Republicans for a long time, but also Donald Trump, both them saying that basically the Keystone XL is going to be a job producer, and we're going to build it with American steel. Guess what? The Keystone pipeline, it's going to get its permitting process. It's going to be built with Chinese steel, and the State Department just released its numbers, its job numbers, and let me tell you, Sean, it's shocking. Tens of people will be employed long-term by the pipeline. 35 people, right? So you're talking about
We knew for how long now, like a two or three years about this whole entire debate?
Exactly. We've known this. We've said this. We've talked about this, right? This has been part of the resistance to kind of, you know, the pipeline building and the fracking and the anti-fracking movement is all, we've been saying this for forever. Keystone, the Keystone Research Center has published some stuff on this about what the job creation looks like. But now we have like a national statistic, what the Keystone XL has been in the news. And guess what we end up with 35 jobs. So meanwhile, you've got a Democratic governor in this state, Tom Wolf, right? Basically hawking the same nonsense about job creation and all this other kind of stuff.
And then you have a Republican in the state below us endorsing a fracking ban.
Exactly. So you've got, what do you do right here? So this is where, you know, this is the opportunity, like for the resistance in the Democratic Party, right, in this state, basically you should be taking that and running with it, especially as we're seeing that, you know, the growth of the pipeline resistance out there in Lancaster, right, basically say that we need to kind of keep this pressure on and say that, look, even the State Department, Keystone XL, a project that big, right, is proving that you're going to have minimal job creation over the long haul. I mean, this is just it. But we don't have a Democratic Party apparatus in this state that is even capable of doing something like that, right? I mean, again, if they can't hold a press conference, they certainly can't build a resistance. So it's up to us, folks. But hey, I want to get to a couple other things, the national things, because this has been kind of a crazy week, right? So my favorite thing from yesterday, right, was that, okay, so, you know, there's all this Russia stuff that's out there, right? And, you know, me personally, I know there's lots of, you know, arguments about this on the left and things like this. Me personally, I think, like, look, Russia did something, right? Did it make or break the election? I don't know. Maybe it had an influence or whatever. I mean, Hillary Clinton ran a horrible campaign, right? So there's like 1,000 things that went wrong there. But we could, at the very least, we can say that the Trump campaign and Russians had an allied interest, right? And there seems to have been some communication. What killed me yesterday was that, you know, of course, the guy who runs on the House side of things, Devin Nunes, right? He runs the House Intelligence Committee. Right. And he was also worked on the Trump campaign. Right. Now, there's been questions that have been raised, right? Gentle questions that have been raised by Democrats that, you know, maybe he's not the best person to be heading this investigation because, you know, he's in the Trump camp. Well, we got kind of some proof of that. So apparently some new evidence, and CNN was reporting on this last night, some new evidence has come forth. It's saying that we have more than just circumstantial evidence, right? Linking some of the Trump campaign to have direct conversations with folks in Russia. Now there's some other kind of evidence, right? And I don't know, there's circumstantial evidence and there's what? Direct evidence, eyewitness account, I don't know, right? We don't know the details of it yet, but when that report landed, right? Before Devin Nunes, right, goes to his own committee and kind of hands off that information, right? What does he do? He like slips out the back door. He runs, first stops enough time enough to talk to reporters saying, oh, I got to go talk to Daddy Trump, right? Runs over to the White House, pounds on the door. Daddy, Daddy, let me in. I got to tell you something. Basically goes in. The jig is up, man. The Alphabet Boys, the G-Man, they're putting an end to our party, man. They took the keg. You know, it's like, that's what they're doing. They went in there. So he goes over to Trump and like nobody knows what the hell exactly he said to Trump, but then he goes back and talks to the media again,
and he, right? like his facial expressions, he looked like stunned when he was,
oh my god,
he looked like he just saw a ghost when he came out of the meeting with Trump, like out of the White House. I mean, you have a press conference to let you know what you're doing, and then you have a press conference to tell him afterwards what you did.
Right. And then another one after that to say, I just had to go to apologize to all my other committee members because I went behind their backs to go report to the president. Yes, I'm the mole. I'm the mole. I'm the leak. You know, I mean, it's like.
And then this comes after a hearing where they were going after people who were leaking the whole entire time. Did you watch the Comey hearing at all on Monday?
Yeah,
I got to caught some of it, and like Trey Gowdy's going after, well, what we really need to do here is go after the leakers and the journalists who are publishing the leaks, and then he goes right behind their backs and fucking stuff,
right? It basically announces to the media, like, you know, they're like, you know, the media first catches him, they're kind of like, why is he running away, you know? Like, where's he going? And they stop him, and he basically tells them he's running over to the White House because, and they ask him when he comes back, like, well, why did you? And he said, I guess it was a judgment call. I mean, obviously it was a judgment call, but like, I mean,
and
like,
it was the wrong judgment call,
right? It was just kind of like, dude, do you realize what you just did? Right? I mean, you know, all sorts of stuff kind of going on there, and that was pretty crazy.
And this is someone who grew up as a farmer who had no intelligence. How is someone running an intelligence committee who never had background dealing with intelligence?
Well, because the same reason why you have someone at the head of the EPA, which wants to destroy the EPA, and someone at the head of education who knows nothing about education. The same deal is that all is like, you know, the people that are put in place there are basically there because of their loyalty and their hackness. What?
But this is Paul Ryan at this point, who, I mean, like, you couldn't find like a military, you couldn't find like a, nope, like a right, like a Republican operative who was in the army who dealt with intelligence.
Nope.
To run this committee?
Not on Trump's team. Right? I mean, that was part of the dealing. Like, this is why you put this guy in here. You put the Trump guy in. You know, this is, you know, and I think that he was there from the beginning for exactly this reason.
And one of the things I thought was really great, like, Maddow again tied this all together in last night about Paul Manafort, who's, you know, having another, like,
another round of fame.
another
bad hair day.
Like, I mean, she tied it in. Like, okay, do I really think that the Russian assassinations are connected with going on here? I believe that's a little bit like, I'm skeptical of that, but there,
you know, but go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Well, but what is one thing though is Paul Manafort has been having a really bad past 2 weeks now, because again, she tied that in perfectly. Like, yeah, once Yanukovych fled the country, he decided not to, you know, shred the documents. And since he decided not to shred the documents in his own palace, you know, Paul Manafort's getting $14 million cash. You know, like we have a person who calls into the work sometimes, right? Yeah. For deliveries, and I ask, you know, you want to pay cash or credit card? I was like, cash. You know, and I felt like saying cash. You really can't follow cash. You know, it's a little hard to, like, you know what I mean? You're getting $14 million off the books. What's Paul Manafort going to be doing with that money? You know, cash transactions.
Boy, wasn't for delivery.
Like, but no, I mean, like of course, it's going to be cash. Cash is untraceable.
No, exactly. And I think that, you know, one of the things I'll say about this is, like, you know, this is what, look, I get that the Democratic Party is all in on the kind of, like, on the Russian narrative. And they think this is going to be the kind of silver bullet that's going to kind of, like, bring all the kind of apparatus down, which I think is an absolutely ridiculous kind of way of proceeding. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. And it shows you that they're just abrogating the responsibilities to actually articulate policies that people actually give a shit about and building an organization that's capable of gaining power. But that aside, right, I think that, you know, why that kind of matters, they want to kind of talk about the international intrigue and all stuff. I get this. For me, it's pretty simple. Look, I grew up in Utica, New York, right? Utica, New York is a mob town, right? So I look at this through the perspective of, this is the way the mob works, right? So this is where you go back to those killings that are going on, right? It's not like international intrigue, like a government secret agent is going out. No, Russia is basically run as a mob right now, right? So what do? Anybody falls out of line, they whack them. It's as simple as that, right? I mean, I don't see why. My wife is saying there last night, right? You know, she's like watching this picture of this guy who, you know, was basically killed on the street. And she's saying, why are they even collecting evidence? They know what happened here, right? And I'm like, this is what happens in mob towns, right? It's like, you know, I remember the story my dad told me growing up, right? Right across the street from his office, right? There's this bar, like, heavily populated during the middle of the day. People go there for lunch, people shooting pool and everything. Like, two guys walk into the bar, midday, packed bar, like, pull out guns, kind of waste these two guys, right, with kind of multiple rounds right there. Police show up 15 minutes later, nobody saw a thing. Right? You know, I mean, like, I don't know, I was getting a drink, I turned around, there were two dead guys there, I heard a loud noise, but the music was loud. You know, I mean, stuff like this. This is the way kind of, like, mob culture works, and that's kind of what's going on. So it doesn't have to be this kind of orchestrated political conspiracy in the same way if you understand the way that kind of crime bosses work. And this is the, you know, and I think this is the affinity. This is the ultimate affinity between kind of Trump and Putin and these kind of strongmen, right? Is that's the logic they use. I'm not saying they are the mob. I'm saying they operate in the same exact logic. So, you know, for me, it's like, would Putin have somebody killed? He wouldn't think twice about it. Right. Because that's what you do. Right. You know, you're running your garbage trucks. Right. And the Sopranos, you're running your garbage trucks by day. You have your nice little family and you're whacking people who get out of line on the side. It's pretty simple. It's all business.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I should have suspected that, like, in that narrative. You know, I grew up in the Philadelphia area, you know, and like back in the 90s, like, you know, when actually my uncle's closest friend, he passed away a couple years ago, but he was full bred Italian in South Philly. And one of his best friends was this guy named Chicky Narducci. And Chicky was wasted during the middle of the day. You know, he lived right out back of my uncle. Yep. Like, my cousin was playing outside as this guy was wasted. And what happened was, his sons, two sons went around and they went out and they killed the person who killed his dad.
That's right.
So, you know, the Chicky Narducci gets out, his son gets out, and his son was there helping out my aunt after my uncle died, helped clean out the house, you know, asking, you need anything. And I was talking, I was like, man, and my aunt's like, you know, he's such a good boy. He just got caught up in the wrong crowd.
No, but that's what I'm saying. But it's true though too. Yeah. And like, this is the other thing, right? It's like, you know, you think, you know, when you have these Democrats, you basically are looking at the big conspiratorial stuff. They're basically saying, look at these people that are getting off, right, around Putin and stuff. Because I think it is about power, right? But I also don't think that these people, like, the reason why that they were off because they had the secret microfilm kind of tucked underneath their suit jacket that would have exposed the whole Trump connection. No, they just got out of line. Boom, you're done. Right. And especially if you're having any kind of international pressure, you want to make sure that you've got every little possible leak buttoned down, literally. Yeah. Right. And, you know, and I think that's unfortunately where we are. But I mean, for me, that's how I see this stuff. I don't see
it. And a lot of these people are getting off left and right. People are getting thrown out of windows. People are getting poisoned, shot in the streets.
Well, he wasn't thrown. He slipped, right? Did he fall or did he? Of course he was thrown, right? I mean, come on. Are you kidding me? He was defenestrated. You know, it's crazy. So one more thing. So we have a couple more things, actually. So the other thing that was kind of interesting in the Trump insanity. So we know that, well, first of all, Rex Tillerson said his first words, right, this week to the press, right? Finally said,
I am he.
No comment another day, right, or something like this, response to Andrew Mitchell's question.
Well, this is after he didn't want the job originally. You know, he told
it was his wife. His wife said, you had to do it, Rex. You got to get the hell out of the house. You're driving me nuts.
Which I just love that. You know, I didn't want the job, but my wife told me I got to take it, so I took it. I'm like,
yeah, it's like, I think it was, after she cracked his Wayne Tracker account, right? Did you see all that stuff?
Yeah.
Did you see that? It's like, whatever. But it's like his alias that he was writing about EPA stuff and global warming stuff. He had Wayne Tracker, whatever, like that. Anyways, the double cowboy boy. So, but, you know, so now you got, Tillerson has basically laid down a weird kind of maybe gauntlet, I don't know, with North Korea, right? He's kind of been kind of gruff with kind of Europeans. And now, right, he made the announcement that he's blowing off the kind of the NATO meeting coming up, right? Say, nah, just not going to go there. I'm going to go down to Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort and meet with the Chinese president. And we're going to talk. Right. And then maybe, I don't know if we can reschedule the meeting or not, because I've got this meeting in Moscow coming up after that. And nobody knows what the hell's going on. Right. So, I mean, this is, you know, talk about statescraft by another means. I mean, here you go. I don't know, man. I don't know. We're in for it. But there's some good news, though, Sean. Can I tell you the good news?
What's that?
Ivanka's getting her daddy back. Did you hear this?
Like, I did not.
All right. So Ivanka is it was uncovered that Ivanka is basically going to get a office in the White House, in the West Wing, right? So she is getting an office in the White House, not because she's employed by the government, right? Just because she's a child of the president, and she admits that there is no precedent for an adult child of the president, but she said she's voluntarily willing to follow employment rules and things like this and codes of ethics, but even though she's really not bound by them because she's really not an employee, right? I mean, it's just kind of creepy, right, about what exactly her role is as she's moving through there, especially after the summit when you had Angela Merkel came and Trump places Ivanka right next to Angela Merkel, right? I kept on thinking, like, yeah, Ivanka's there so she can look at Angela Merkel's notes, right, and basically kind of keep her occupied and on track to make sure she can't communicate with her people. That's what it looked like to me, but I was blown away. It's like that, you know, here you go. She's just going to be moving in. Funny stuff.
Nice.
Well, I know she's been missing him, you know, and, you know, clearly Donald's getting a little tired and sad because, you know, Melania doesn't want anything to do with him. So she's not, no, she's like, ooh, New York.
But he's been in Marley weekend.
Yeah, well, that's true enough, but crazy. All right. So
hey, he's bankrupting the Secret Service.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true, right? And causing huge bills to the city of New York too, as well, which is nuts. But all right, so yep, Ivanka gets her daddy back, that's just the best I could do for fun for today. But we're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, maybe we'll kind of try to conjure up a couple hopeful possibilities, things to look forward to, and maybe fun for the weekend. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back right after this.
Of the resistance, ah, we are living proof. They will know what happens, ah, if they don't tell the truth. We will rise up tall, gather in the streets of every state capital. We will rise up tall. The aching of our feet won't slow us down, no, not at all.
This is how it all gets started. Ah, secret votes behind closed doors. While they're MAGA in the closet. Ah, getting richer off the poor. We will rise up tall. Gather in the streets of every state capital. We will rise up tall. The aching of our feet won't slow us down, no, not at all. Throw our healthcare in the garbage. Ah, blame it on Planned Parenthood. They must know what they have started. Ah, we won't be misunderstood. We will rise up tall. Gather in the streets of every state capital. We will rise up tall. The aching of our feet won't slow us down, no, not at all. The aching of our feet won't slow us down.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out to Coop podcast. And so, yeah, it's been another kind of packed week, filled with just kind of crazy, a little bit of disorienting news throughout the state. And one thing I forgot to mention in the first part of it is we're going to start to see basically the Pennsylvania budget season is going to be start kicking up in full force. And as part of that, too, as well, we're going to see what's going to happen with the Pennsylvania state system of higher education, and public education as a whole. And if you recall that ABSCOF had its strike this past year to basically hold a line on temporary faculty to make sure that we're not going to see an increase in exploitative conditions to basically preserve certain things in the educational quality. Well, it appears right now that Frank Brogan and his cronies at the presidents of the universities, at least some of them at this point, are beginning to roll back some of the protections here and finding other ways to get what they wanted. So Mansfield University just yesterday announced that it is basically taking that first step towards retrenchment, or in other words, elimination of programs and elimination of faculty members. So we're going to be paying attention to that. And Kutztown University, and I think I've heard at least one other university in the state system, has basically devising a plan of basically getting more of what it wants by basically turning full-time temporary faculty members into part-time ones as a way of kind of stripping away their benefits and decreasing their own cost and increasing contingency at the university. So we're going to be following some of that kind of as that develops. My gut is telling me that it's going to increase fairly significantly over the next few weeks. So we'll keep an eye on it. But so Sean, got anything kind of fun and happy for the last there, or at least some news that you want to share?
Well, it looks like Nunes, we were talking about in the previous section, had a press conference while we were podcasting. And the headline from Fox News, he had a press conference 10:30 this morning, said, Nunes says information from Trump surveillance, quote unquote, concerned me.
Concerned me.
So who was that guy like that they had that was on the radio the past couple weeks, that Pat, that person that was going around the Russia? Majority Report, Sam Cedar was talking about him for like the past couple of weeks. You know, about that he was making those rounds, those like unforced, he was falling his own sword. It looks like now Nunes is starting to fall his own sword.
You know, yeah, this guy, Carter Page. Yeah,
there we go, Carter Page. So it seems like Nunes is now taking a play out of the Carter Page playbook.
Yeah, just go on and talk like you're like just unintelligible, and just keep your mouth moving and say stuff that makes no sense, and like act kind of like you know something. Oh man, this is gonna be interesting.
Here's a shovel. You know
what's that?
So here's a shovel.
Shovel. He did. I'm telling you, he looked like he was shook, though. When it, not the first media interview, when he came back and he basically said it was a judgment call stuff. Like he looked a little sweaty and kind of out of sorts and kind of like, holy crap. Right. And like, I wonder, you know, it made me think is that I wonder if he saw his own name in some of those reports.
Yeah, it looks like Schiff was asked questions today. And so Schiff asked if Nunes should be removed as HP House, the chairman. And he said, that's a decision the speaker needs to make. And then he says, Nunes presser doing outside White House, important in terms of understanding what's going on here. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I'll tell you, if this was a movie, I'd be totally intrigued. Right. But it's freaking real life. You know, it's like,
and he just canceled, the chairman just canceled a hearing, intelligence committee hearing with Clapper, Brennan and Yates in an attempt to choke off public information.
Get out of here. No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, that's one way to do it. You just shut down the flow of information and you're all set, right? You just pretend, you know, it goes back to the old thing. Like, you don't need to name it, Sean, right? All you got to do is just let it happen and it'll be fine. Taking a playbook out of the PA Democrats, right?
So as this is like unfolding, the debacle at the healthcare, Nunes is just digging himself deeper and deeper.
There you go. Right. It's a thing of beauty. It's a thing of beauty. So one thing. So here was my interesting tidbit for the week. This is, I'm a bit of a sci-fi fan. Right. I love space and stuff. My daughter and I watched rocket launches and things like this and videos from the space station and all this other kinds of stuff. And so one of the things that I found was just kind of telling, right? We've been tracking on this show and Raging Chicken and kind of left media in general about all the budget cuts that are coming down for agency after agency after agency at the federal level as part of like Trump executive orders or proposed budgets and things like this. And yet NASA has just been given a big green light to colonize Mars, right? By Trump. And he was all behind it. It was very, very kind of interesting is because we know that there's been this increasing push. I mean, it started some under the Obama administration, although Obama was going to be, I think, remembered. And when you're talking about space agency stuff, he's remembered over the long haul as being the guy who helped privatize space because he basically took kind of the rocket launching and all this stuff out of the hands of a government agency and basically opened it up to a private industry. We could debate that all it is, but, you know, SpaceX has since basically taken over the launch pad that was the one that was first used to launch people into space. So it's kind of historic. And SpaceX has been, basically preparing for its first trip to Mars, as has NASA and as have other agencies and so on. What's interesting about this is that, you know, why is NASA being spared? And got me. I think it's something big that Trump thinks that he can put into his pocket. But it's done with a little bit of an exchange. It's basically like, as long as your satellites are not going to be used to monitor climate change on the Earth, sure, you can go to Mars. Here's the bill. So that's pretty interesting. But, I'm going to be following this, in some ways or another, in part just because I'm fascinated by it. And I think the whole question is about what we're doing in space and all this kind of stuff and how this kind of links up to questions of climate change and what people see as possible, all this kind of interesting stuff. Because I think, frankly, I've been thinking a lot about this over this past year or so, is that we're seeing basically the public-private narrative basically getting itself, starting to get played out when it comes to space and Earth. Let me give you a perfect example. There was an article in Wired magazine a couple days ago, I guess, basically saying that that we should sell off the International Space Station to the highest bidder. And I thought that was frightening in some ways, right? Right now, it's basically there for scientific purposes. But now you see basically some pushes from some sectors, at least, especially the Silicon Valley based stuff that are looking to find ways to turn that into a private venture. So I think the same battles that we are fighting here on planet Earth are going to start making themselves into extraterrestrial battles for space. I recognize that's the real long haul, but it's worth paying attention to some of how this stuff develops, because when that colony gets set down on Mars, folks. Resources get moving. Guess who's not getting shipped to Mars, right? That's probably all of us, and unless we're there to kind of help mine the asteroid belt around Ceres. So that's my little space junk for the day. But that's all I got, Sean. I'm just gonna have to, I've got my news feed up here, and I'm kind of really gonna be following what's happening with the ACA, and see where we go from here.
I wonder if next week's gonna be slower than this week.
Yeah. We should probably start taking bets on this to see, or at least time. I mean, I don't know how you would even be able to quantify some of this. Like, what counts as a slow week? I mean, I feel like each week now it still feels like, I've just burned through a month of my time, less of my life. But
yeah,
crazy. We'll see. I would bet on no. I would bet on no slow week coming up.
You know, like, one thing is, it must be a great time to be like a journalist in DC right now. I mean, I think the reporting has gotten better from your print papers, but man,
like I said last week, a Washington Post, man, is tearing it up.
If I was in DC right now, I would probably be having the time of my life, like debauchery, all that stuff. And then just like this type of shit that's just going on. I mean, one of the things that like, that's really awesome. So Tuesday night we're out at McGrath's in Harrisburg, and there's the Penn State trial going on here. There's also another trial with McCord. Rob McCord's federal trial is up this week as well. And
love it.
Roxbury and I are drinking beer at McGrath's, and like literally 5 minutes after we leave, Graham Spanier walks into McGrath's with all the lobbyists and all the politicians drinking and eating. Like, where else can you get this type of thing? Like, one of the things like I was talking about with a friend, like, man, we need to like make Harrisburg become an enclave for independent journalists. Mm-hmm. Let's get out here.
I agree.
Because of how cheap the cost of living is out here, right? It's like what, $700-$600 a month to for rent. Have like, and just like get a consortium of like independent writers out here and just tearing stuff up in the Capitol, because there is so much stuff going on out here. Where if you have a few more like independent bloggers and independent writers living in this city, you can really start like just turning things on its head.
I think that's true, man. I think that's true. And I think that, I also think it's the kind of thing that, if not true, should be true in like capital cities and cities like around this country. I mean, I think now's the time. If now's the time to relearn that kind of aggressive, adversarial journalism that was once the hallmark of sectors of, of this country, one that has brought us the stories. What's that?
Your I.F. Stone type of writing and stuff like that going on.
Well, I'm telling you, I look at this period of time is like, if we are not going to celebrate the return of the muckrakers now, then we just got to lay them to bed forever, because man, there's lots of muck that needs raking. I'll tell you that. Well, listen, Sean, it's been great, man. And I wish you a good week, and I'll talk to you again next week.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
All right. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press, signing off for the day. We'll talk to you soon, folks.
See ya.